is A View from the Bridge, unofficial podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. It's Tuesday the 15th of October. My name's Davey McGimsey, and I'm kicking tonight's show off live from Ward 9 at the Bristol Royal Infirmary. This is hockey. We things like broken legs won't get us out of stride. If you want to get in touch, send us an email to podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. Hit us up on Twitter at ABFTB, or go to the website www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. The show is hosted, as always, by Director General Patrick Smith, assisted on the bench by Neil Coach Russell, and standing in for myself tonight, they needed a great hockey mind, someone suave and sophisticated, but as we were struggling to find any of them, we called our good friend Murph. Here's the guys.
Well, as we said in the intro, we've had a bit of an injury to one of our, I'm sure you'll be delighted to refer to as our British star. But like, while Davey's on the DL, we're able to go be like Doug Christensen at the podcast and go straight for another import. And that import is Satanta Sports and Giants Live TV's Aaron Murphy. Welcome back, Murph.
Gee, that's a tough act to follow. They're another import. Thanks for having me, guys.
And joining him is a man who can be very clearly heard in the background of Giants Live TV when Jeffrey Suez puts a big hit on Gord Baldwin. It's Neil, the Coach Russell. How are you doing, buddy?
Hi, Patrick.
That come on, Jeffrey Suez, was very clear on the commentary. Very clear.
Well, it was a great hit, though, so you got to give Coach credit. It was a beauty hit.
It was a good hit. It was a good hit. Well, let's chat about that, gentlemen. Game on Saturday night. Against the Sheffield Steelers. Massive game, because it was always going to be a bit of a cauldron with the return of Doug Christensen being one subplot. But unbeknownst to us, during the week, another subplot came in with the return of Craig Peacock, returning from Denmark after things didn't really work out there. And there was an interview of Craig Peacock during the week, and I got the interview myself on Sunday, where he said he was just in a bad situation and he had to get out of it, and he's now returned to Belfast. And Murph, what a way to return. Within 55 seconds of stepping onto the ice of the Odyssey, bang, Craig Peacock's back.
Yeah, it was really, you couldn't have scripted it any better. It was like Hollywood had gotten a hand on the story and quickly filed it off to us. But it was unbelievable, and you could see it happening, because his first touch of the puck, there was a good save, and then they kept going that line, and eventually he was open along the side there. I think my call of the goal was 71 reasons to get excited. Welcome back, Craig Peacock, because it just kind of happened in slow motion. But you know what? We were talking, Coach and I, a while back about how we loved the power play. And both of us had said to each other, you know, Craig Peacock looked really good out there, because he goes into those dirty areas and finds ways to get to the net. And then he's done that in the first two games that he's been back, including obviously Saturday. But he did it again in Coventry on Sunday. So, look, Peaks is back. And all these people said, oh, he couldn't stick it in Denmark, or he couldn't stick it, you know, like all UK players, he wanted to come back. That's nonsense, because this guy, he wanted to come back and he wants to get ice time. He wants to play. He's an ambitious guy. He didn't come back because he's not ambitious. He came back because he is ambitious. He wants to play. He wants to score goals and he wants to win trophies. And I tell you what, I was pretty excited to hear the news. And I've been talking to Peaks on Twitter via direct message. And I tell you what, this team now has goals. And Coach has said it before, they have goals on every line. They have goals everywhere in this lineup, including on the blue line. So having Peaks back is unbelievable.
Coach, I think that the league took even more notice of the Belfast Giants that they hadn't taken notice before with regards to Peacock coming back. But looking at, the other subplot, you got a chance to properly grill Doug Christensen before the game. We all knew it was going to be a big thing, Doug Christensen coming back to the Belfast Giants with the Sheffield Steelers. It was a good crowd in the Odyssey, and the atmosphere was really stoked for it. And that's the result exactly that the Belfast Giants wanted.
Absolutely, and you're right. You know, Doug, as you well know, you've interviewed him a few times as well. Doug's a great guy to converse with and talk hockey with. And, you know, he's a great guy to interview, because he's not one of these coaches or players that, you know, gives you, you know, token gestures. He's elaborative and, you know, he's honest as well. And, you know, I think I asked him a few fairly straight to the point questions, and he answered them what I felt was certainly very honestly. And, you know, he was... He told me, like, off air, as it were, that he was, you know, he was nervous anticipation before the game. And, you know, he knew it was a big night for him and his team. And it was his first Earhart conference game for the Steelers this year as well. And, you know, against the Giants. And it was a massive, massive game for them. And, you know, obviously it worked out in the Belfast Giants' favour. But, you know, I know Doug was very excited leading into it.
Goals for like I said, Craig Peacock, Jeffrey Swayze, Adam Keefe and Dustin White cutting for Belfast, Jeff Legree and Robert Dowd with an absolute peach of a goal for the Sheffield Steelers to try to keep them in it. But Murph, the Giants were always on top in that game. They always looked the stronger of the two sides. And we know that Doug Christensen has now went in and brought in Rob Sirianni, which seems to have strengthened their team going forward. But in this game in particular, the Giants showed exactly why they're going to be contenders for this season.
Yeah, there was definitely a buzz downstairs before the game. I like to go down and kind of talk to the players and the coaches before the game, and there seemed to be a nervous anticipation on the Sheffield side of things. It's always tough when you're on the road anyway, but yeah. You mentioned it earlier. It was a cauldron for them to walk into. The Giants, on the other hand, there was a focus. There was a steely resolve. Swezer walked in, and Jeffrey Swez is pretty, if you have never seen him up close, he's got a stare that's pretty, you know, you can tell this guy's pretty intense from the get-go. But on this night, he really looked like a guy that wanted to go out and win, and he wanted to win for Paul Eadie, because all the talk was the return of Doug coming back. And Swez had a fantastic game, including that hit you mentioned on Baldwin. But Swez, to me, looks like he's ratcheting up each game that I do for Giants Live TV. He looks a little bit more comfortable, a little happier in his surroundings, and he was all around nasty in a good way. If you're a Giants fan on Saturday night, he looked really, really good. And there's Keefe again. You know, that line keeps scoring goals. And before that suspension that Keefe had, you know, he was leading the team in goals, and he scores another the other night. So I mean, and White Cotton, I just think this guy is the business. He does the things, the little things that don't show up on the score sheet. So White Cotton, Swez, and Shields, that line is fantastic. And then you're getting goals from the, you know, the crash and bang line, the Keith Floyd and Garside line. And then you've got Peaks on the other. I mean, there's goals everywhere. So Saturday, they really showed that they're gonna contend for all trophies. There's no doubt about it. The only thing that, you know, it's like any team, it's whether you can keep those guys healthy, keep those guys going. Yeah. And Stephen Murphy's game is coming on now too. So listen, the rest of the league, the rest of the EIHL is going to start taking notice. These Giants are for real.
The other, sorry to interrupt you, I know you're about to ask a question there, Paddy, but the other big thing, you know, from a coach's perspective is, don't forget, we've got to put Chris Higgins back into this lineup. Yeah. And it's going to be really, really interesting to see who kind of is the fall guy, who kind of loses that bit of ice time out of the lineup at present, because as we all know, before Higgins picked up the concussion, he was really starting to fire on all cylinders. Played a great game in Nottingham that you were at, Paddy. He obviously came up with that game winning goal that Murph and I were in commentary for against Bray. And you know, he was, to me, he was the guy that was standing out, has a bit of X factor about him. And you know, he's going to demand that ice time first thing of the night. He's going to demand that ice time whenever he's back. So it's going to be really interesting to see what way Paul Eadie works it.
And we'll come back to Swez. Coach, I'll stick with you. With regards to Swez's goal was followed up with an incident with Baldwin. We talked about the hit on Baldwin. The incident was that Baldwin seemed to, well, he's been assessed at kicking, and I've been given a 5-game automatic ban for that. It looked a bit like a stamp, but he's banged to rights on that. There's you can't do that in the game.
100% of what's did yesterday on the highlights, and it was as blatant a stamp, a kick, or whatever you want to call it. It looked like a stamp to me. Something very, very dangerous. He went at him with a skate, and you know, you just don't do that to Jeff Swayze. And I think, as a few of the Giants fans have mentioned us on A View from the Bridge on our Twitter page, you know, Gord Baldwin is a big guy. He's a physical presence, but as soon as Jeff Swayze, you know, went looking at him, he wasn't going to reciprocate. You know, Swayze has a fantastic reputation as a tough guy. He's a fearsome competitor, and it was a bad. I'm sure Doug privately will be absolutely fuming, because Gord Baldwin is pivotal to Sheffield Steelers' defence, and he's gone for 5 games now, and Sheffield are going to have to play an import down.
Murph, with Baldwin being out, the injuries that they've got there, like I've already said, they have went into the market again and signed their 53rd import this season in Rob Sirianni, who went into the Metropoint Arena on Sunday night against the Cardiff Devils, straight off the plane, scored a hat-trick. They really are looking for this turning point, aren't they? They really, the Sheffield Steelers, they've got the personnel there, they just need to form the team.
Yeah, don't forget as well, Nate DiCasimiro wasn't great on Saturday night, but this is a guy that's an Italian national as well, and I watched him at the World Championships in Budapest. This guy is the real deal as well. So, yeah, Sirianni comes in and gets a hat-trick straight away, so that'll get headlines. But wait till Nate DiCasimiro is comfortable in his surroundings and has a few games under his belt in Doug's system. That guy could be one of the signings that we look back and go, geez, you know, that was a big one, and Sirianni came in with a bang. But Nate DiCasimiro is the real deal as well. So there's a couple of guys there that can really play at a high level. I mean, Sirianni was an MVP last season. I mean, these are the other, you know, DiCasimiro is an international who's played in a lot of different professional leagues. These are two guys that could really lead from the front for Sheffield. And the problem is for Doug is that every time they get like a positive in, they get Sirianni, and now the Baldwin thing comes down. And that's kind of what plagued them in the first few weeks of the season, is they get a win and then someone would get hurt. Someone would come back and then someone else would get hurt. So they, as you mentioned jokingly, they've got like, you know, 54 different imports. But the fact of the matter is Doug's trying to find the right chemistry. And I talked to him after the game. He said it's better now to lose a few games due to injury and get it right, because he doesn't want to be losing games after Christmas when they're getting closer to, you know, playoffs and stuff like that. And also, look, this is a team that needs to win a trophy or two, right? Because they haven't had the best few last campaigns. So, look, Sirianni is a huge, huge X factor. And Coach mentioned about Higgins. Is he guys that have the X factor or guys that make a difference? Obviously, Sirianni is going to be that guy, but don't discount Nate DiCasimiro as well. I think that guy's the real deal, obviously, by his pedigree and his CV, but also because he plays both ends of the ice and he'll buy into Doug's systems.
I think the one thing that we talked about just leading into the season in the middle of towards the end of August, the one advantage that Coach Yeti and the Belfast Giants have this season over probably all of the teams in the league. Like, this is a team in Belfast that know each other inside out. Doug has, you know, they've played together for 2-3 years. We've only four new guys into the team this year. You know, Doug has reformed that Sheffield Steelers team. It's, you know, they've obviously some stalwarts like Thomas and Hewitt and those types of guys back, but generally speaking, it's been a massive overhaul, and that has taken time, something Doug said as well. It's taken a bit of time for that team to kind of start gelling together. And, you know, I'm sure probably deep down Doug is disappointed with some of the results that they've had, because let's face it, you know, they've obviously put a lot of resource into it. And, you know, you might be able to pick players to come and play on your team based on the points production that they've produced, but finding that team chemistry is incredibly difficult, and that's something that Belfast have over probably nearly every team in the entire elite league.
Well, that's a great point, Coach. And I tell you what, the other thing is, talking about Doug, is I know that everyone said that on Frank Doyle. I mean, because it looked like he was going to Cardiff, and then now he's in Sheffield, and then he didn't get off to a great start. So a lot of people were jumping on that sort of, let's give him the negative press, or so to speak. But don't forget how good Frank Doyle was. That could have been a lot uglier on Saturday for Doug, even in defeat. I mean, that guy had 38 saves and at times was the best player on the ice for either team. So Frank Doyle, if he starts to get into that sort of mode that, you know, we all know he can, because that's why he was brought in to do that job and to be a, you know, a 1A goaltender, he played really good the other night. So Doug is, as you mentioned, it's a total overhaul, and that includes one of the most important positions of goaltending. And Doyle looked really good on Saturday. If he starts to get going, this is going to be a dangerous team.
Well, speaking of teams that had major changes, it sort of feeds us on to the Coventry Blaze, who the Giants took on Sunday night. A 7-4 victory in the Sky Dome. I don't know if you got to see it, Murph. Did you get a chance to watch the webcast?
Yeah, I watched bits and pieces, and then I always check out the YouTube clips. They do a good job down there, and I did watch the highlights. And I tell you what, there's no quit in the Giants, which is a good thing. And they came back from a few deficits there, and it goes back to the Brayhead game where they believed they could get into that. I think this is a team that believes, and that's dangerous for other teams like Coventry.
I think you're right, Murph. It's one thing that you have harped on about from the start of the season, and it really stood out to me on Sunday night was White Cotton. White Cotton for me was our MVP for that game. He was sublime both in defence and offence. He was jumping around like a rink rat, you know, chasing down the puck. Whenever he had it, he made smart plays. He just is an all-round fantastic player. And you're right that we have said it a few times, the fans in the stand, maybe sometimes, you know, he might not stand out to you, but he does for a coach. He stands out massively because he does the small things really, really well. I thought he was brilliant on Sunday night.
I say the Belfast Giants went down to two very early goals, one by Kevin Harvey and then Adam Henrich. I think it was only 3 minutes and 23 seconds into the game before Paul Elliott had called a timeout to calm things down. But the Giants showed great character. They were two goals down. They pulled one back. They went two goals down again when Harvey scored a second. They pulled that back again. And when Ross Venus put them ahead, they pulled that back again. And then in the third period, just basically blasted away and ended up 7-4 winners. The first goal was Peacock for the Giants. Again, two goals in two nights. A brilliant return from him. But what really got me is the fact that Brookwell, Suez, Sandrock, Mason and Surrett scored. Coach, we've talked about it time and time again, the depth of scoring. We've mentioned it already tonight, but the depth of scoring in the Giants and having the character to be able to come back in a game like this. And don't get me wrong, Coventry's a difficult place to go. Matty Soderstrom's trying to build a really good team there, and they've been unfortunate at times, but the character to come back the way they had was fantastic.
Oh, brilliant. And you talked about some of the players, like the goals from all different areas. Thought Robbie Sandrock was superb on Sunday night. Yeah. Scored one, set one up as well for Peacock with a lovely backhand pass, you know, back on the boards. And, you know, his vision. Robbie Sandrock to me is one of the best players to ever play for our club. I know this is his third season now with us after his first season back in 2002, 2003. But that guy's sublime. He's great to watch. He's a veteran. And you can just tell, you know, he commands a presence on the ice. And I just, you're right, we have goals absolutely everywhere, and the team chemistry is superb. Everything just seems to be clicking into gear. You know, Murph and I again have talked about it, but I thought Brookwell on the power play was superb again on Sunday night. It's such a big presence in front of Zacharias, and I'm so glad that we're now utilising that big guy at the net, because we genuinely really haven't done it since the Paxton Schulte days.
Yeah.
I remember the odd time Jason Ruff randomly, who was a great playmaker himself, but Ruff was sometimes using that screening position. Like, we really haven't employed that, and I think it's vital to our success in the power play this season.
Murph, you look across the game and you look at the way that Matty Soderstrom was obviously disappointed with the way that it sort of imploded on them in the third period. They were missing Olsen. Kevin Harvey, brilliant player on the puck, didn't really want to get involved in any of the physical stuff. He seemed to be under orders despite the fact that the likes of Suez, Adam Keefe were trying their best to antagonise him. And he was trying his best to try to draw penalties from him. He's a great player. And it's no doubt that the Coventry Blaze also will win a lot more games with him in the lineup.
Yeah, he had a goal, you know, the other night, and he looked physical. I mean, he caught Dustin Whitecotton, who, as Coach said, he does a lot of things, a lot of smart things, and one of those things is Dustin Whitecotton doesn't get caught. He Harvey got him with a nice open ice hit. And an important note on team chemistry there is that Cody Brookwell was in there like a shot.
Yeah.
To try, and then Harvey refused, and he refused against Suez, as you mentioned. And I think that they really are missing Benny Olsen, because A, he's become a very good defenseman and an integral part of their blue line, but also because he kind of settles things down on the ice and would probably allow Harvey to you know, score a few goals and just play a physical brand as opposed to having to answer the bell. But there's no doubt in my mind with the injury problems and sort of being down a tough guy there in Coventry that Matty Soderstrom would have said to Harvey, look, go out and play physical and push the envelope a bit, but we can't have you taking 5 minutes against a team that's so deep like Belfast. So there was that, and I noticed that Keefe was trying to get at Selby, and I wonder if that's a little bit of trying to put Selby back in his place after he caught Davey Phillips with a nice punch in that 5-0 win a few weeks ago. But I mean, this is a tough team, Belfast, and you know, you've got Keefe and Lloyd running around, and Harvey is that type of player that will go out and hit bodies. But I really think that, I know that a lot of fans last year thought Olsen was a bit of a sideshow and would go out and just do silly things. But Benny Olsen's a very good defenseman when he puts his mind to it. And he knows without Mike Egner there this year, he's got to be sort of that big leader, that big gut body presence that plays well on defense. So it's disappointing that he broke his hand, because he had been playing well. And he was very good in that 5-0 win at the Odyssey a few weeks ago. So look, this is a team. Matty Soderstrom is a very good coach. And people, you know, say, oh, Tomo left there, but that was, you know, he apprenticed under Tomo and was a very important part of that club when Tomo was there and was a warrior as a player. So he knows what it takes to win. And I think Coventry are a good team, and when they get everyone back, they'll create. So this is a team that, you know, was up, like you said, a couple of different times on Belfast, but Belfast just really believe they can come back. So, look, Harvey wasn't going to fight because they're short benched, but it certainly annoys fans, no doubt. I noticed a lot of people calling him a chicken and all that. Look, Harvey's pretty hard
nosed.
Yeah, he's not a chicken, I can tell you that. But when the coach tells you, look, I don't want you doing that, you have to respect that as well.
Coach, we look at the overall picture then. You said last weekend that this was could be an early make or break weekend for the Giants with the game against the Steelers and a tough game in Coventry. And we've walked away with 4 points. It's obvious to say that's a brilliant result for the Giants.
Oh, absolutely, Paddy, no question about it. And you know, it had the ability to turn into a disastrous weekend for the Giants if we didn't pick up the 4 points. But we've come out on the right side of it and played some really good hockey, you know, scored a lot of goals. And we've put away the Sheffield Steelers at home and played pretty well, kind of dominated that game in large parts. And, you know, I thought overall we've done very well to get those 4 points.
Well, we'll move on, guys, because there's loads to talk about because it hasn't been a dull week in the Elite League. After recording the show last week, we talked about the incident involving Derek Campbell and a former Coventry player. I haven't just talked about Coventry, but Derek Campbell having been involved in the incident against Dundee and what the suspension would be. We knew a suspension was coming. What we didn't expect was the very next day, I haven't spoken, Coach. There was, first of all, an announcement from the Hull Stingrays that just stated that he'd been released for his contract. He was no longer a Hull Stingrays player. And then it followed a 47-match ban. 15 matches for fighting off the ice, 12 matches for attempted eye gouge, 10 matches for a knee to the head, and 10 matches for excessive force to the head, resulting in an impact to the ice. Well, weren't expecting that, Coach, were we?
No, we weren't. I expect the thick end of 10 games. But no, it was also, by the way, the shortest press release in the history of elite ice hockey history. Derek Campbell has been released, full stop.
Yeah.
But listen, I think none of us had a clue that there was an attempt at eye gouging. That to me is the lowest of the low. As a fellow professional, to do that, we know ice hockey is a physical sport, and sometimes there's a very thin line between, you know, excessive force and using appropriate force. And, you know, Campbell has just lost the plot, and we kind of mentioned it last week in last week's podcast. I think it was Sashetti, who's not a big guy at all, you know, checked him into the boards, and it was a reasonably late hit, but we were amazed at the reaction because it was not a really bad hit. And, you know, we kind of did say last week, there had to have been something else said for Campbell to react like that. And, you know, maybe there was something else said and we just hadn't heard about it, but his actions were completely, you know, out of order. And, you know, for the eye gouging alone, I wouldn't have him about me. And I think it's the right decision.
Murph, the Derek Campbell is well experienced in the Elite League, you know, Manchester, Sheffield. He's been at Hull, Newcastle, Coventry. He knows how this league is. He's well experienced in how players play it. But there's no way you can act like this. And I struggle to see where he goes from here.
Well, there's a few things that came to mind when I saw the 47 games is that, well, clearly, you know, there's a marker been thrown down that, you know, people criticized last year that there wasn't a lot of transparency and there wasn't a lot of rhyme nor reason to you know, people getting suspended and why there was a 5-game as opposed to a 3-game or someone to get a 7-game. This is like, it's been broken down, as you mentioned, 15 for this, 12 for that. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that the league has decided to make a stand here because, you know, aside from the fact that, as Coach said, eye gouging, I mean, come on, the next thing is biting and pulling hair, but yeah. You also are chasing guys down a tunnel. You're also fighting off the ice, and now you're the league is trying its best to, you know, be a family night out, to be an entertainment, a physical sport, yes, but a sport that has sort of a code. And you know, I don't know whether there was something before that, but like I've watched the hit over and over again. Yeah, it was a hit from behind, and it might rankle you or ruffle your feathers. But to carry on like that, it's not like there was a stick swinging at his head or like an intentional, Like, he just really lost the plot, and I think Hull did the right thing by releasing him, and then I think the league did the right thing by saying a statement that, well, it doesn't matter if you're a respected guy who's been around the league a long time, and, you know, we're not going to take it easy on you, and 47 games is what you get for becoming a sideshow, and that really was a sideshow. It was like WWE gone wrong, like some sort of crazy backroom brawl somewhere, and I think it had to be done on both sides. Look, I watched Derek when I did games in Coventry last year on the Coventry Blaze TV, and Derek was a hard worker and a physical presence, and I never got any sense that he'd lose the plot like that. But I mean, for Hull, it was just they had to get clear of that sort of reputation. They didn't want to condone it, and there's no defending it, right? So they distanced themselves, and the league, I mean, it's probably a bit harsh, but the league is throwing out a marker saying, look, put on a sideshow and embarrass the league, embarrass yourself, embarrass your team, and we're gonna sit you for basically the entire season.
I want to come back briefly to a point there you made. I'll come back to it after I ask Coach this question. But a point you made there on it being a family oriented sport. But Coach, where do the whole Stingrays go now? There's been a bit of chat about how maybe they shouldn't be down in imports for 47 games. Well, you know, this is a personal thing on Derek Campbell. Should they be hampered an import for the full length of this ban?
Good question, and I've thought long and hard about it, and I've seen plenty of debate about it on Twitter. My view on it is I don't think the Hull Stingrays should be penalised for one player's moment of complete madness for the full 47 games. You know, I probably would go along the lines of maybe a 10-12 game suspension for on an import, but you know, it's a difficult one for the Elite League, but I think a bit of sensibility has to come into the decision making process.
Murph, what's your take on this? Because I actually stand on the opposite side of you, Coach. I think that if you don't suspend an import for the entire of the 47 games, then you're really going to run a risk of setting a dangerous precedent. Because what would stop somebody who had like maybe an 8-game ban? Say you look at an 8-game ban on Andrew Conboy, why not sack Conboy for the length of that 8 bans and then rehire him at the end of it? You know, you start to set up things that maybe get a bit murky, Murph.
It's a slippery slope when you're right, and if it's a 5-game suspension and Hull had released him before the 5 games, maybe you say, well, that's too bad, you have to serve the 5 games and import down. But the fact of the matter is, this is a league that needs to sell tickets, that needs to create a buzz, and if Hull has to go a whole year and import down, it's really tough, right? Because like you said, guys, you know, might milk it the other way and start sacking guys and then rehiring them at the end of suspension. But what there should be is there should be a rule brought in that, you know, a percentage of that has to be served by the team, especially if it's going to be like losing the plot like that, because a team shouldn't be held accountable for basically insanity, a momentary loss of judgment or whatever. I mean, the Conboy thing, I mean, 8 games, then he's got to serve that. But, you know, if they put Conboy out for 58 games, then I don't know. It's hard to say they have to serve the whole thing, because teams could actually fold over that. I mean, how can you compete against other teams like Belfast and Nottingham if you're an import down and you're already having a hard time competing with your full complement of imports? So, look, I agree with both of you, but I think Coach makes a good point that maybe it's got to be like a percentage of it, like 10 games of that 47, they're just going to have to suck it up.
Let's come back to the point you made about it being a family oriented sport. It's a very physical sport. It's a sport that condones fighting because it's part of the game. It's a sport that's very physical in regards to hits behind the play, on top of the play. You know, okay, it's policed. It can be policed properly. But can you really consider ice hockey a family sport the way that it's portrayed or the way that it's promoted?
Okay, well, that's a good point. But you know what? There's another thing there is that, okay, and you said it, it's a sport that condones fighting on the ice. We can't have people like Derek Campbell or Benny Olsen or Kevin Harvey or Adam Keefe, any of the league's tough guys, running around off the ice like a lunatic. You mean a kid could get knocked over or whatever. So
yeah,
it is a family sport in that people come and they enjoy themselves. And I spoke to lots of people after the Giants game the other night. It was their first game. They brought their kid on the advice of another family, and they're going to now keep coming back because they had such a great time. And the kid already had his jersey on and already loved Jeffrey Suez. So, you know, it is a family sport, and the league has to market that as such. The NHL markets itself as such, and rugby is the same. You see kids at games, and it's because that, yeah, it is a physical sport, but it's kept on the field of play. And when someone steps out of bounds like that, like Campbell did, they have to be punished, and the league has to show fans and media alike that if people step outside of that sort of grace, that 5 minutes for fighting or whatever, but running around and chasing guys into the other locker room and eye gouging and stuff, it has to be punished, and it has to be shown to be punished so that that family atmosphere can still be respected to a degree.
Murford, I wanted to get your opinion on it. You know, something that I've been thinking about recently from watching the Belfast games and what have you, there is a lack of fighting at present in the league. In my opinion, and do you think there's any coincidence in the lack of stand-up, toe-to-toe fighting and the amount of bad slashes, the amount of late hits, the stamping by Baldwin, these types of things? I haven't seen this volume of kind of dirty, cheap hits and stamps and things like that in a long time in the Elite League. And do you think there's any correlation there between that and the fact that there's been a lot less fighting, yet the league is still full of tough guys?
Yeah, I think you're onto something there, and I wrote a piece recently, a week ago or so, and I talked to Barry Melrose, who's obviously, you know, used to be a coach in the NHL and a player, and he's an analyst now. I talked to Todd Kelman, I talked to Adam Keefe, and every one of those guys, the question I posed them is that, you know, there's a lot of people saying that hockey needs to cut out the fighting, or fighting needs to be banned. You remember Steve Yzerman came out a few weeks ago and said, you know, maybe fighting is dying in the NHL. Well, Kelman, Keefe, and Melrose, three guys that I really respect and three guys that make a living within the game, all said that hockey has its place to police certain things like stamping, slashing, guys headhunting. And so, I mean, the Baldwin thing the other night, I mean, he didn't want to fight Swez, so he maybe got a little bit, you know, out of his own comfort zone, so to speak. And, you know, Harvey not fighting after maybe being called upon it the other night. So guys get frustrated. But I think that if guys aren't willing to fight, then, yeah, you know, there's a bit of frustration. But also we can't rely too heavily on that, because the Campbell thing is just – that could have happened if no matter what, because I think we don't know what's happening to that player in his off-ice life or whatever. He could have just been having a day where it was going to kick off and that hit from behind led to that. But there's definitely been a lack of fighting at Giants games, but we have noticed lots of high sticks and sort of, scrums after the play. And, I mean, guys not wanting to get involved with Swez. It wasn't just Baldwin a few weeks ago. It was someone else. Chris Frank wanted nothing to do with Brookwell. So there's definitely been that air of, I'm gonna sucker you, I'm going to slash you, I'm going to give you the face wash, but I'm not going to answer the bell. And eventually that can boil over. So it's a good point, Coach. And we definitely haven't had any toe-to-toe, you know, on Giants live TV. So you're right there. And just in our little corner of the league, we haven't seen as much as we might have seen before.
Coach, is that not, I'll ask yourself, is that not symptomatic of maybe what's come through with regards to the import limits? These players are coming in, they are tough guys, not out-and-out fighters, but they are tough guys. But you look at somebody like Adam Keefe, whose goal production has been fantastic to start the season. We don't need him in the box for 5 minutes, so therefore he is going to stand up for his team, and he will answer the bell if called for. But again, he doesn't want to put himself in a position that he gets either A, suspended through a fight or too many majors, or B, gets put in the box when we need him mostly on the ice. Same for the likes, we said that for Benny Olsen. You know, we said about how he's not a one-dimensional player. We look at Kevin Harvey at the weekend. Again, didn't want to get involved, didn't want that major penalty. I believe he's only maybe one or two away from a suspension. So he doesn't want that major penalty. So they're not going to answer the bell because they're a luxury. They need those players on the ice, not sitting in the box.
Well, the way I would answer that would be, let's take it back to the Belfast Giants Coventry Blaze game that Murph and I covered at the Odyssey a few weeks ago. Coventry Blaze go 1-0 up, 2-0 up. Obviously, they ended up winning 5-0. I think it was after we went 3-0 down that Keefe dropped the gloves with Harvey, and Harvey just skated off and got all of the signs of chicken, chicken, blah, blah, blah. My reaction to that, and I'm a huge Adam Keefe fan. I think his point production, his physical play is brilliant. But I like my team, I felt, and I said it in commentary with Murph at the time, we came out flat. Coventry were all over us. And in those types of cases, I want my tough guy or my energy line to kind of answer the bell in some ways and get my team going. And that falls to Adam Keefe and our team. So on that particular occasion, I felt that Keefe was being reactive as opposed to proactive. You know, you've got to be proactive in pro sports. And especially if you go, you remember the times Paxton Shieldy talking, you know, in interviews and all the rest. He said, like, his team at home went 1-0 down, maximum 2-0 down. He was out to answer the bell and kind of get the crowd energised, get his own team energised. And I just feel at times, you know, don't get me wrong, Keith will answer the bell and he went for Harvey eventually, but I'm talking about more about the proactivity. And I understand, you know, what was the point? I noticed towards right at the last 5 seconds of the game on Saturday night, Tim Spencer gave Keith the eyes just as they kind of skated past each other with 5 seconds to go. And, you know, you just knew that if Keith kind of turned his body a certain direction, Spencer was ready to go. And Keith saw that, and Keith turned his body the opposite direction and skated off, because the game's won. Why would he fight now? Why would he run the risk of injury before heading into Coventry? You know, skate off. I'm talking about the more the proactivity of getting the team energised. That's what I'm more referring to.
Murph, what do you think with regards to, like, the luxury of having these players in the team? Yeah, there's no doubt that these guys can fight. Like you say, if Spencer had turned one way and Keefe had turned the other, as coach has said, they would have went toe-to-toe. But there's too much at stake for both of them to sit in the box.
Especially with 5 seconds to go, so coach is totally right. Adam Keefe made a veteran call there that he'd file that away for maybe next weekend or whatever. But it is a luxury, but it's a necessary luxury. And I can tell you right now that Adam Keefe, yeah, he's got a lot of goals to start the season, but he knows what his job is, and so does the rest of the league. So it's a luxury, but it's also a leveler. And, you know, he'll have a word with Spencer, I'm sure, probably in pregame skate in the next matchup, and he'll say, like, don't, you know, with 5 seconds to go, don't be a clown. If you want to do this straight away early tonight, let's do it. And Adam Keefe is proactive like that. And you know what? So is Benny Olsen, and so are most of the guys in the league that know that that's a part of their thing. But it's situational. It's like coach said, it's to change the momentum. If to get, you know, like Sean Thornton, let's go NHL. Sean Thornton makes the Boston Bruins one of the best teams in the NHL. He makes that team year in, year out when other guys get sent down to Providence. He makes that team because those guys know, the management there knows, the coaching staff knows that Sean Thornton, if the Bruins come out flatter, if the Bruins are getting, you know, physically pushed around in their own building or even on the road, Sean Thornton will go out. He can chip in a goal here and there, but Sean Thornton will go out and he'll level that off, so to speak, and he'll make sure that there's that vibe that I'm going out there, I'm doing my job. So now, Patrice Bergeron, why don't you chip in a goal? Hey, Brad Marchand, why don't you set up a play? Because I've just gone out and I fought John Scott of Buffalo, who's twice my size, so why don't you guys score a goal? There's that sort of pride in your work as well. So yeah, it's a luxury, but I think it's a part of hockey, and it's a part of hockey that when done well is honorable and it serves a function. And look, Adam Keefe is wearing that captaincy for a reason, because that thing that he brings to the game is well respected throughout his teammate and well respected throughout the league.
Absolutely.
And with Davey not being here, be remiss of me not to mention on you bringing up the Boston Bruins yesterday afternoon's 3-2 win for the Detroit Red Wings.
That was a great game. You know, the original six game is always nice, and Detroit is really good this year. They were always good, but they got a great performance on the road yesterday there. So yeah, it's going to be a great season watching some of these original six matchups.
Not to digress too much, but yeah, Vice and Alfie are looking brilliant for the brilliant pickups for Detroit, and I thought it was really entertaining last night. Breezing through some of the other events, because we got another big one to talk about when we come to the game against Cardiff that takes place on Thursday night, but also, we've had a situation where Nathan Moon has moved on from the Brayhead clan. It's a big loss for the guys up there. And Billy Bagran in Dundee has been assessed a 4-game suspension for a check from behind. But one of the other big things this weekend is the Continental Cup is coming to the UK. The Nottingham Panthers will be taking on the Vikings, The Hague and Auriga Juniors. Murph, I'll start with yourself on this. What do you think the Panthers can expect? Well, these are probably three of the biggest games that the Panthers have ever had.
Well, it's huge, isn't it? I mean, anytime you play teams caliber, I'm sure that Riga team is going to be a force to be reckoned with. that's not going to be easy. And I tell you what, it's going to be a great weekend of hockey for that franchise, because that's a great building, and we all know that from our playoff weekend media dealings together. Mm-hmm. But this is a test where they're not going to be sort of maybe the favorite going into that weekend, right? And it's back to back to back, and if you even make one mistake or come out flat once, you're already sort of putting yourself on the back foot. And then there's the other line of thinking that it really takes a lot out of you. Remember when the Giants did the Continental Cup last year, it sort of, you know, they had to travel. It sort of took away from their routine, and they had a bit of a tough time after that, right? So there's a couple of things here. Can they get some wins here and try and advance? But also, does it put a spanner in the works of their own domestic season and their own ambitions to try and go out and do again what they did last year, which was pretty well dominate all competitions? So, look, I'd love to be there, and I know the diehards at the NIC are going to experience a really special weekend of hockey, so I hope the people that go out there realize how important the moment this is for the franchise. But I also caution that it won't be easy, especially against that Latvian team, but it's going to be fantastic. And it's a good, you know, the Panthers are really, really good franchise, right? There's no doubt about how special last year was for them. And this is good for the entire league, because it exposes UK hockey and our, you know, our brand to these other teams and these other media entities. So, look, a special weekend of hockey coming up, and I really, really wish the Panthers well, and hope they can do well representing the Elite League. And I know Corey Nielsen will have that club fired up.
Coach, you know, we look at those three games that have. Like, we had our own, as Murph mentioned, we had our own trip to Landshut that didn't end up maybe as much as good as we'd hoped with regards to the results on the ice, but it was a fantastic weekend nonetheless. However, similar to the Panthers, the first time that we went into the Continental Cup, we got to hold three games at the Odyssey, and it was a fantastic weekend. It's going to be a fantastic weekend for these Panthers fans.
Yeah, I think Murph summarised it all perfectly there, and you know, the Nottingham fans are an expectant bunch, and I think Murph is right in saying exercise some caution there, because the likes of that Riga team are superb, and, you know, it's going to be a tough weekend for them. But you just never know with home support, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 people in the NIC, home ice, Kowalski's playing well, he's top netminder, arguably the best in the elite league, and one of the best in the elite league history, let's be honest about it. And, you know, when you've got someone like Kowalski, gives you a chance to win every single night. And you know, that's probably the only time I've ever said this in my life, but I actually wish them all the best for the weekend.
Yes, I'll take a deep breath and say
Good luck
to the Nottingham Panthers, and you can decide for yourself whether my fingers are crossed or not. Moving on, guys, we'll look at the two games that are coming up, let's say, this weekend. The first one, of course, is on Thursday night. It's against the Cardiff Devils. Now, this brings up its own talking point in itself. The Cardiff Devils, over the last couple of days, have had a few incidents. We know that Gerard Adams is under a little bit of pressure with regards to the results that are taking place on the ice, most notably at home, where they've really, really struggled. And this week, I think it came, Murph, I'll start with you, I think it came out of the blue, the fact that Phil Hill was released. I don't know about you, but that came as a massive shock.
I don't understand that one at all, and I'm a Phil Hill guy, because I when I was doing the call in the games at the final Olympic qualifier in Riga, he busted his wrist up pretty bad and wanted to keep playing, and they said there's no way you can play. So he battled after that final Olympic qualifying tournament. He battled to try and get back in the lineup, did so, and I watched him again in Budapest at the World Championships, and I watched him at the playoff final weekend, because, again, the Devils made it to the playoff final weekend, as they always do with Jared Adams as the coach. And Phil Hill's wrist never really recovered, yet he kept playing and he kept battling for the Cardiff Devils. A lot of pride, because he's from that area. He's been a Cardiff Devil. It's been his ambition to do well and represent his team. And they, you know, he's got 9 points in 12 games this year, and they say that he hasn't been good enough. Well, that whole team hasn't been good enough. So if he's the scapegoat, I think it's there's no public relations there, because it's a terrible move for a PR, from a PR standpoint, but also for a guy that, you know, basically couldn't even close his hand last year because his wrist was busted up so bad. And at the playoff final weekend, his sutures along that wound were oozing, and he was in bits, and they just they say that he's the reason that there's problems down there. I mean, he's been tossed aside, and I don't understand. Unless there was a serious internal problem that we don't know about and that I wouldn't want to know about. But Phil Hill has always been a classy guy to the media. He's always been really good with the fans, and he's been an absolute warrior for that franchise. So, look, you can toss aside guys if they're not performing. You can toss aside guys if they're not in shape. You can toss aside guys if they're not buying in or they're not willing to play through an injury or whatever. That guy is none of those things. He's bought in from what I know. He plays hurt. He's in shape. He puts up points. So it makes zero sense to me. And it seems to me that there's a lot going on at the Big Blue Tent that is not public knowledge per se.
Yeah, I think we spoke, Coach, during the week about this and saying there must be more to this than meets the eye. Today we've had a situation now where it's been announced that Jared Adams is stepping off the ice behind the bench, freeing up an import slot. So it looks like there's going to be money made available there from Phil Hill being released to bring in an extra import going forward. But of course, they've already replaced a defenseman with a forward import. We've already had a situation, they've done this before last season where they got rid of Barry McKenzie to bring in Mark Richardson. So they're used to shuffling things about. But your take on this whole movement, I struggle to use the word circus, but it there's something not right going on at the Big Blue Tent.
I actually feel sorry for Jared Adams because I genuinely think he's one of the best coaches. He year in, year out, as Murph says, he gets that team challenging. He gets that team to the playoffs every single year. And, you know, he has done a brilliant job. Now, I have to say, and you were the actual person that picked up on it on the podcast and mentioned it, you know, it did look as if the team that he had put together was based on bulk, and there was very little finesse there. And, you know, we saw Sean Limbright's Twitter fury after the preseason game. And, you know, he went on to Twitter and said, you know, there's no chance that Cardiff Devils are going to win anything this year. They're all out of shape and all this type of stuff. And you kind of picked up, you know, the impression there that maybe Jared Adams hasn't been the smartest in his recruitment on this occasion, but it's very unlike Adams not to kind of rectify it. But the whole Phil Hill thing, it does not make any sense whatsoever. He is one of the best Brits in the league. So you can only surmise from what's happened today and letting Phil Hill go that they're going to put a lot of resource into this new import. So are they going to bring in a real top-end guy? It still doesn't make any sense to me, Phil Hill going, but you can only, as I say, surmise that they're going to bring in a fairly special player.
And you also look at the support that Phil Hill got on the likes of Twitter for the likes of Brad Voth, Jason Hewitt, shocked by the actions of the Cardiff Devils. But Murph, this leaves the Belfast Giants in a very strong position come Thursday night.
Yeah, and this is why, you know, it doesn't matter how much money or how much resource they're going to use to bring in a special player. How can they not see that it would be better to have Jared Adams at least playing Thursday night? Because now they're downhill and they're down an import, and they're not going to get Wayne Gretzky or Mario Lemieux in here by Thursday night to play the Giants, right? So why does Jared retire today? Why doesn't he retire when they get that new player in? Or he's a day away, unless they're going to come out tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. and go, look, we're bringing in so-and-so from the DEL, and it's a done deal, and we've already got his work visa, and we've already got it worked out, and he'll be here by Thursday. Because if he's not here, whoever they're bringing in, if he's not here by Thursday, and I can't see how he would be, as, you know, it's not enough time. Well, why would they want to be Hill down and Adams down? Someone's double shifting, someone's playing tired, and this is a Giants team that could put up, boy, they could put up a big score on you if you're not at your best.
I couldn't agree more. And it really, Paddy does sum it up there by saying it does appear to be a bit of a circus. You know, the whole Paul Reagan statement, you know, where he was saying that Jared Adams is safe, but he's not safe, but he is safe, but he isn't safe. You know, it was the most random statement from a smart businessman that I've ever come across. And, you know, you just wonder what's going on in the background there. You know, is there
there's obviously words been had behind the scenes, but you just wonder what is going on. And with the Phil Hill situation, you do kind of wonder whether he's maybe questioned authority, you know, maybe asked a few questions that were a bit close to the knuckle, as it were, and maybe made a couple of points about things. And, you know, it just seems like a farce, but I think the Giants, you know, are going in there at full strength, albeit minus Chris Higgins on this occasion, probably. But, you know, the Giants are going to, I will be amazed if we do not come away with the 2 points.
The game against Cardiff on Thursday night, I believe there is a webcast. This will be the webcast returning to the CardiffDevils.com. I think if you check their website, I think it's a 7:30 face-off. Guys, on Sunday night, it's still on the road for the Giants, and it's back against the Sheffield Steelers. Coach, the Steelers are definitely going to be looking for revenge in this.
Oh, big time. And it was one of the things in the post-match interview that Doug said to me as well. You know, he said, we get a crack at the Belfast Giants straight away again next Sunday. There'll be a good crowd there, and yeah, I'll have my team ready for that return game. And, you know, Doug's a proud man. He's a proud coach. And, you know, he said that his team are full of proud players, and, you know, they don't want to lose on their home ice, and they do not want to lose against the major contender, or one of the major contenders again in Belfast. So it's going to be a barnstormer of a game, and I just hope that we come away with the 2 points again.
Murph, you look at the way that the Sheffield maybe had a bit of a faltering start to the season, especially at home, but an overtime win against Coventry, a win last weekend against Cardiff, they're starting to make that home their own.
They are, and, you know, Sirianni wasn't in the lineup, you know, in the defeat this past Saturday. So Doug's got that, and he's obviously got him going straight away, as you mentioned, off the plane and a hat trick. D. Casimiro will have another few games under his belt, and he'll be more comfortable in his surroundings and playing at home. And, you know, again, I say it, and Frank Doyle played so well. He's played well at home. If he can come out and play as well as he did the other night, and they've got Sirianni in the lineup providing some more firepower, and they can, you know, they weren't great on the power play, but if they can click on a few power play opportunities, it's going to be a different result. Now, in saying that, the Giants come in there, and if Higgins is feeling a little bit better, then maybe there's another decision for Coach 80 to make. So this is two teams that could be facing each other fairly quickly after that emotional night, the cauldron that was the Odyssey, Doug's return, Peacock's return. This could be two teams that are getting to a point where, you know, they're really, really at their, you know, their highest point. They're at so far in the season, and it could be the game of the season, you know. I mean, they don't want to lose to Sheffield. It's a tough place to win, but, you know, Paul 80 will have them going, and they'll have that belief after the win at the Odyssey. It could be a game that you know, we look back and go, wow, you know, that was one for the ages. And I think, you know, you mentioned it there, Doug is such a proud guy. He'll have that team ready. But Paul 80, you know, he's going to draw on that experience of the win the other night. So this could be one of the great ones early on.
Well, if you want to keep in touch with that game, there'll be Twitter comments coming from myself. I'll be at that game. It'll be at AVFTB on Sunday night. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. Murph, thanks for stepping in for Davey. I think it'd be a risk of us not to send Davey our best wishes. I know I haven't said it yet, but our best wishes in his recovery. But thanks for stepping in once again.
No pleasure, or no problem at all. It's my pleasure, and I wish Davey a quick, you know, recovery from the leg injury. And I would never be able to fill his shoes, so this is just clearly a temporary measure. And we hope the big guy feels better, and all the best for me here.
With that cast on, one of his shoes is going to be massive. Coach, thanks very much. I see now. Murph's got you giving a coach's keys to the game in the period breaks.
Yes, Big Sizz was back from his Johnston Las Vegas, so he resumed his position alongside Murph in the commentary box. So, yes, Murph very kindly invited me up to do a bit of in-between period analysis and have a good chat about hockey. And it's always, you know, I've thoroughly enjoyed doing those games with Murph, and I know whenever Sizz isn't available, I'll be stepping in and sitting with Murph and doing those games. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I loved chatting with Murph and doing what we do, and looking forward to the next home game. I think that we're up against the Panthers. That's going to be an absolute barnstormer.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, guys.
Cheers, Paddy.
My pleasure, guys. Take care and enjoy the games.
With so much to talk about, I am astounded we've kept this be below an hour. But there you go. Thanks again to Murph for coming on. You get him at Murph on Ice on Twitter, at Murph on Ice. Of course, you got the coach, who is at Wrestler147. Thanks again to him for joining us. We couldn't have a podcast without Davey being on it, could we? Broken leg or not, thanks for that, mate. It's at Davey_MCGMcG. What a brilliant intro it was too. And you know the details for this show at AVFTB on Twitter, podcast at kingdomofthegiants.com or www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. Please keep sending in your stuff. I know we didn't get round to talking about the stuff that we requested for on Twitter, but you can understand with it being such a packed show, we wanted to get everything in. And like I say, how we kept this to under an hour, I have no idea. Also, we actually would like to point you towards our SoundCloud account. That's soundcloud.com/AVFTB. You heard us earlier on the show talk about how Coach was chatting with Doug Christensen. You can hear his full interview on our SoundCloud account. You can also find post-match interviews with Paul Eddy, Adam Keefe, Craig Peacock. We'll be sticking a lot of stuff up there when we get the chance to talk to guys pre and post game. So yeah, that's soundcloud.com/AVFTB. There is some very exciting news coming from the Belfast Giants in the next 7 days that we here in the podcast cannot wait to talk about next week. But that's next week. Wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey, and we'll catch you here next time. All of you from the bridge.